You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 347. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm sitting here in my basement. It's cold. I don't understand why it's cold because it should be getting warm, but maybe it's because I'm in a basement. And this is the Punk News Podcast. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile, once again, back from the dead. Were you back from the dead last week?
I was back from the dead last week. Like Jesus.
Just like Jesus. He just came back from the dead, you know? We had
blasphemous bastards.
Well, you know, it was actually the really big thing about Jesus for me in this past week. John, you have an Italian family. I have an Italian family.
Side note, Adam White, your name is actually not White, but Bianco. Why don't you call yourself Adam Bianco?
My family changed it in the 20s for a reason that is kind of funny. And I'll tell you that story in a sec. But We, as one of the things that my family does every Easter, is we cook rabbit. And I don't know if that, like, not because of Easter, it's just there always happens to be rabbit amongst the things that we are cooking.
Several people just turned this off now.
I know. Adam, I'm sorry, so vegans, but my old Italian grandmother doesn't give a shit about your politics and she cooks a rabbit. actually, she's dead.
So she really doesn't.
She started that tradition, right? Anyways, though, there's usually rabbit that is involved. I mean, we also eat dandelions, so don't get me wrong.
That's an Italian thing.
Oh man, like you get dandelions, and then you get this is gonna fuck all the vegans up. So you get dandelions, right? What we would do is I would go with my Nona. And we would go to the grape vineyards that were in Niagara. We would pick the dandelions out of the grape vineyards that were growing amongst the vines. And those were the ones that you wanted to go, like, scrounge and pick because, you know, that, like, because they were in a vineyard, they weren't going to be covered in, like, gross roadside pesticides or anything like that. They were just
people peeing on them. That's a real problem. That's true. That's a problem with dandelions, people peeing on them.
Well, not just that. Just, like, you don't want to go pick.
Is that why they're yellow, John?
Yeah. You don't want to go pick dandelions out of your lawn where you've been, like, hitting them with, you know, all sorts of horrible chemicals. So anyway, so we would go pick dandelions, you bring them home. So what you do is you get dandelions, and then you have to do this outside because it creates a fair amount of smoke and stink, is that you would get like a big cast iron skillet, and in the skillet, you would heat up both vinegar and then, I want to say, probably some sort of like salt pork type thing, like, Probably the closest you can get to lard that is sort of bacon, whatever that is on the Italian meat spectrum. You cube up that and you're heating that up in this like molten hot vinegar, and then you dump that over the dandelion greens, and that's sort of what makes that salad. So it's very good if you don't mind, cruelty, I guess. But I enjoy it because I enjoy cruelty. What were we talking about? Anyways, yeah, rabbit.
Salad's always better when you cook it in lard.
I know. So we always have there's always rabbit involved. It's not like the main dish or anything, but there's always been rabbit involved as far as I can remember. And my daughter's there this year, and she's 4, and we're really trying to make my mom like keep the whole rabbit thing on the down low because 4-year-old is not going to be able to process. Like, the Easter Bunny brought me chocolate this morning, and now we are going to dine on some rabbit. Like, it was not at all something that we wanted her to have to contend
with. You don't have to beat
them
to death with, like, you could kill them less cruelly, because I just picture, like, you know those, like, mini bats they give away at baseball games?
You use
that to beat them.
Adam, you buy live rabbits?
No, I don't buy live. No, I mean,
Adam goes to a pet store. Do you have any meaty rabbits?
Give me the cute black and white one with the flappy ears.
This is as much of a like weird old tradition thing in my family that at one point prior to Easter, my mom emailed like her brother and sister, my aunt and uncle, and me with a picture of like the rabbit from the butcher that she got. And it was like, here it is. And it's like, I don't know why I'm looped in on this. Like, it's not an event in my life. I understand it'll be there, but okay. So yeah, I was really involved for some reason in the whole rabbit procurement process this year. But yeah, I see. I used to have an old Italian neighbor here in the city, and he had a pen in his backyard in which at various points in the year, there was like 6 to 8 rabbits running around. And these were not like cute little pet rabbits. Like these were hares. Right. And then they would go away for a while. And I'm pretty sure I could put together why. So he was like breeding him as livestock in his yard. Anyways,
they went to rabbit heaven.
Yeah. Something well, listen, about PETA, don't send me email.
Here's how you cook dandelion down in southern Italy. You take dandelion, this is Morrissey style. You take the dandelions, put it in a hot pot, put a little bit of olive oil. No, I'm sorry. You boil some water, you throw it in the boiling water for about 30 seconds, pull it out, throw it in a hot pot with some olive oil, some garlic, a little salt, a little pepper, you know, stir that on up.
You see, that's how I would cook something like rapini, but anyways, though, my mom's family is Northern Italian, so we don't follow the cruelty-free.
Adam White showing his bona fides, calling it rapini instead of broccoli Rob. Very good,
come on.
Very good, Adam White. Very good.
Man, you guys are like totally out-day-going me. I mean, I'm just like, the only thing I know about Italian cooking is like the prison scene from Goodfellas, you know?
I feel like I got into that story because, oh no, I remember why. I'm inceptioning like 3 different levels of segue here. You had asked, my family was Bianco. Yeah, it was at some point. I used to think, or I at one point read a family history when I was a teenager, and I reinterpreted the whole changing Bianco to white thing as some sort of civil rights struggle where I was reading it as like, oh, because of all of the, you know, all of the discrimination that we were getting, and because of the fact that like during World War II, you know, it was harder being an Italian businessman or whatever like that, we had to change it to, you know, keep our livelihood. But I think that the actual answer is that there was like back in the 1910s, 1920s, whenever this happened, there were 2 Bianco families that had Italian grocery stores in the Niagara Falls area. And one of them, the not my family one, apparently didn't pay their bills. But because record keeping being what they were at that time, the bill collector people would be coming after everyone. So we're just like, fuck it. We're changing our name to get rid of those dirtbags' reputation on us. That is the true, totally lame reason I think they changed it.
I'll tell you my family last name. It used to be Gentilucci in the old country. And then when they came to America, they spelled it wrong. And that's how it became Gentili. That's true.
Huh.
I thought when Italians were trying to hide Adam, that they'd have those little mustaches on a stick things. Those like black curly mustaches on a stick. I thought that's how they would change their identity. But, you know, I guess I probably watched too many cartoons.
Yeah. Every time I hear one of the weird old family history things, you realize just like how many fucking odd roads your life went down because everything was stupid in those days. Like, So you know, so my family changed the last name for reasons that I'm sure in today's age would not be a problem for anyone. Like you wouldn't have needed to change your name. But then I even like, so my dad's side of my family, Southern Italians, John, they came over, they went to Ellis Island, and they weren't allowed into the United States because I guess like my great grandmother had an eye infection.
What the hell was that?
Did you hear that? There was something upstairs. It sounded like a pool ball.
Like somebody dropped a piece of sheet metal or something.
We don't have a pool table upstairs, so I don't know what's
happening.
You think
it was a ghost?
It could have been a ghost.
Probably.
I have 2 children, so that they're kind of like ghosts. No, so they went to Ellis Island. They would not let my family into the United States because my great-grandmother had an eye infection, and they were like, we're not letting eye infection immigrants into the United States. So they went to Colombia, and they lived in Colombia for a number of years, and then eventually got back into the United States. Like I don't know when, like when the eye infection cleared up or something. And then they moved into Niagara Falls, New York, and then they hopped the border to Niagara Falls, Ontario. But like, just think about that. Like you had an eye infection, which is a fairly benign thing, and you had to go live in Colombia.
I like the, like we're taking the
bow. Eye infections were probably Columbia? Fatal back in those days.
I like we're taking the bow from Italy to America. Let's go on over. Three months later, here we are, America. They're like, you can't come in. We're like, all right, we're taking the boat to Colombia.
I have no idea. Like there has to be some reason why, but just like, that's pretty fucked up. Like Colombia, you could not find anywhere else to go.
Dude, Colombia is awesome.
I mean, hey, I'm not dissing Colombia. I'm just saying that in, you know, it's a long boat ride after you just had a long boat ride. Maybe they did have antibiotics then? They couldn't have been just like, you know, can you?
No, everything was fatal back in those days, Adam. You know, stub your toe, fatal. Eye infection, fatal.
It's like, we're not letting any of these, like, toe stub, you know, immigrants into the States. Oh, man.
If your family would have stayed down there, you could have been heir to, like, an incredible cocaine fortune.
Yeah, Adam, you could have been a drug lord.
I'm disappointed that I'm not. All right, so we're 10 minutes in here. Let's do something. Have I even announced who else is on the show? Tom Trauma is here.
I'm back.
Tom, it's been a while.
It has. Too long.
Wow, I spent 10 minutes talking about all that bullshit. Anyways, so...
Talking about clubbing them rabbits.
Clubbing rabbits. Being cruel.
Eating... like weeds that most of us try to kill. And
I'm talking about like eating rabbits. I'm going to play a propaganda song later on the show. Like this is just a really weird, you know, I'm all over the place in terms of my,
just play a Morrissey song.
God, I'm just like my hypocrisy is everywhere today. Before we get into further hypocrisy, John, is there any mail?
Yes, there is. We got some good mail this weekend, and you guys are going to think I wrote these, but I really didn't write any of this. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from the Lone Punker, who I think has written in a couple of times. I don't know if he's a super old school guy or just a semi old school guy. Here's what the Lone Punker has to say. Hi, podcast. I love your site and I love your podcast. Over the last couple of years, I've been living in a city where I don't know anyone and I am far too busy with school and work to find a community, and Punk News has helped fill that void. I think it's great that you have a mix of seasoned writers and newcomers, and that you are so welcoming of your contributors' ideas. In many ways, I think of your organization as the 924 Gilman of websites. However, all these fuzzy whiskey and friendship type feelings go up in flames anytime I go against my better judgment and wander into the comments section, where God forbid participate in them. I just read 28 comments on an article about how punk has inspired some people to try to improve education in their communities by becoming teachers, and every single one of them was talking shit. I'm astounded. And what about the time you guys posted that band fronted by a six-year-old and they got torn apart in the comments section? Shameful. It seems like there's a serious disconnect between the type and caliber of people who contribute to punk news content and those who participate in the punk news comments. I really, really like one of those categories, and I really, really resent the other. Additionally, it has been proven that the internet trolls' presence on the internet disproportionately represents their real numbers, as they are far more likely to comment and more likely to comment more often. Meaning, you're catering to a handful of pricks who are then bumming out your writers, the artists you cover, and your readers. I propose that you nuke the comments section on the site and let those assholes on Facebook or wherever else they want to take their negativity, take it there. I'm tired of seeing shots fired at volunteers who do, admittedly varying degrees of, but mostly very high quality, work, just for the love of music and to participate in the community. Very sincerely, the Lone Punker.
Wow, that's like saying everything, eh?
I hear you. I agree with the Lone Punker.
The Lone Punker, that's...
The commenting is so hard. I mean, like, it's...
I disagree with the Lone
Punker. You
know,
if I was dictator... I feel like I would just make it go away. But on the other hand, there's a community of people that sort of expect us to be there at this point in our history. So I don't really know what to do about it. It's just sort of like a weird fact of life.
What is it that
my life is better by not reading it? But admittingly, it's easier for me to not read it when I'm participating less on a day-to-day basis posting news. When I post news, I totally read them. So, you know, it's easy for me to say that when I'm not doing all the work. This is a weird parallel to my evening because at some point
I was clubbing rabbits and
yeah, I was clubbing rabbits. No, I ended up on YouTube trying to
looking at videos of
pick
people
out a particular propaganda song for this podcast actually. And I was just and as YouTube was doing that thing that it does where it finishes a song and jumps to the next one, I started just looking at the comments thinking like, hey, what's going on under propaganda videos on YouTube? And it's the most horrible shit. So like every time I feel bad about like people being jackasses on punk news, I know that I just have to drift to somewhere else on the internet and I'll find so much worse, and it makes me feel better.
Yeah, I agree. As far as comments go, punk news actually isn't that bad. That being said, I used to be of the position that the comment section has some bad aspects, but the good outweighs the bad. And now I'm very firmly positioned that the bad way outweighs the good. Will I change my mind in the future? Maybe. But right now, I see very little benefit from the comment section. So
I'm gonna jump in and disagree.
So psyched that you guys played Cloak Dagger this week's episode. I listen every week, and I didn't even know. So it was nice. It was a nice surprise. We in Cloak Dagger did this LP ourselves, so it's a big help. Side note, I love the Black Flag special and John Gentile's knowledge of all things Zig and Flag. Thanks again from Jason of Cloak Dagger.
Well, hey, cool. That was Sam Barrett's song.
Right.
So, you know, we have her on once in a blue moon, and she, you know, brings all the quality that we fuck up otherwise.
She makes more people happy in 1 week than the rest of us do all year.
She does. I wish she had come more often.
I actually was trying to jump in to argue with you guys about the
go ahead the comments
about the comment section.
You were strangely silent.
Well, I had my microphone muted because my computer sounds like that. It does the, you know. So I had my mic down, and I was gonna say the thing we do have a community, and the reason we have that community is because of the comments. And if we did not have that, we would not have the community. It's people constantly communicating with one another. It works. It's what makes us special. It is our niche in the oversaturated punk information marketplace. I am vehemently opposed to getting rid of it, even though a lot of people are jerks. And, you know, it is what it is.
I feel like we need to have a Patreon account to like raise money to get Tom some thermal paste for his computer. to calm it down.
So I'm not like, hey, wait, guys, wait. Oh shit, I don't have my microphone turned on. Jeez, guys.
I don't even know what thermal paste is. This is from.
I know what paste is.
Paste would be entirely counterproductive.
It's delicious.
This is from Kyle. Kyle says that he is confused as hell by the garden. Hello, Punk News Podcast. Long-time listener since episode one, first-time caller. This is I'm pretty sure Kyle's written in before, but I'm maybe not. This is probably a John question since I have a question about The Garden. I discovered this band through the podcast. Not sure if you played them on here, but I know they've been mentioned in a few stories on the podcast. I've been a passive listener, but I've never really gotten into them until a few months ago. They were playing a free show at a university in my city, and I had to go check them out. I was instantly confused as hell because over half the crowd was high schoolers accompanied by their parents. I looked at their social media accounts, and yeah, kids, lots of young kids are interacting with them. Do you have any insight as to why the high schoolers are drawn to The Garden? Did they get some placement on MTV or something? I've never been thrown off by a crowd like this before. From Kyle,
I thought for a minute there, by the way, that Kyle meant that like he was at the show with all these high schoolers, and then he started creeping on their social media accounts, and I'm like, no, you shouldn't do that. But he meant The Garden. Whoa, yeah. What is that? Is that a droid? We have droids.
It was a droid. I can speak to this briefly. From my experience, The Garden does have a younger crowd. But it's very much the hip college crowd, kids that are 18, 19, 20. I think the reason for that is because the Garden are younger guys themselves. They're only like 20 or 21 or 22. And they're very cool in that like a lot of cool people hang around them. And the reason they do is, well, for two reasons. A, they're tall, skinny, and good looking. And when you're tall, skinny, and good looking, life is easier. It really is. I wish I was tall, skinny, and good looking. It's just the truth. I'm sorry, kids, I had to break it to you. But that's the truth. But also, they're very unique and weird. So when you're tall, skinny, and good-looking, but also kind of unique and weird, people flock to you for whatever reason. The interesting thing is, though, I've interviewed them a couple of times, and I still speak to them when I see them live. They're totally down-to-earth guys. They're, like, not cool at all. They're like, just chill, nice guys, you know? So the reason the crowd is young, at least in Philadelphia, the college crowd, is because they're tall, skinny, and good-looking. And they're an excellent weird band, and that's what the kids are into these days.
Well, we're going to get to more of this later on, but there is an issue here with people love to bag on anything you champion, John. That's kind of become a sport around here.
That's true. That's true.
But maybe Epitaph has spent a lot of money placing their in magazines and crap like that. I don't know. I don't know. They're playing in Lansing, and they're playing in a very, very small place.
You should go, Tom.
Read magazines. Is that a thing anymore?
I think it's like a Thursday night. Ugh.
Tom, you should go.
I don't know what the kids do. Tiger Beat? I don't know.
Tom, you should go, man. Garden is awesome. Awesome.
I don't know. I don't know that they're for me, but, you know.
Have you heard them?
Don't make me. I've heard them a little bit. Kind of. You know, I've heard the ones we've played.
Check out their first album.
I'll take it under.
Their first main album is The Life and Times of a Paperclip, which is excellent. It sounds kind of like Wire. Listen to that first. Then listen to their second album called Ha Ha, which is amazing. But you shouldn't listen to Ha Ha until you listen to Life and Times of a Paperclip. The point of this conversation being is, when I was in college, I went to Penn State, so maybe this scene didn't exist. But man, I wish I had known like where all the like cool hip music people were in college, like the artsy music people. I didn't know any of that in college. I would have loved to have, like, when I go see the Garden, there's all these young, cool, hip people having fun, not being dicks. I'm like, man, I would have loved to have had that in college.
Man, I would have avoided that scene like the plague.
Tom, right, man. We can get you a man bun, and then...
No, it's not like man bun. It's like the art school kids.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I have zero hairs on my head.
No, I said we can get you a man bun, like in a little baggie. I don't know what you're going to do. Yeah.
Like a samurai thing. Mm-hmm. My son has a man bun, and I'm trying really hard. It bothers the hell out of me, but I don't want to be like the same way my parents were when I had a ponytail. You know, so I'm
just cut his off and be like, I need this. I'm going to see the Garden.
You know, he can still grow it, so it would be all right.
I need this.
I should take him. Maybe he's tall and cool and has a man bun. Anyway,
you can always reset podcast at punknews.org. Listen, if you're in college, find the local cool art music scene. It seems like a pretty cool scene.
Don't find the local punk scene. Don't go to the cool art school scene.
I think the art school scene is better than the punk scene, because the punk scene is just kind of very structured and a lot of rules.
Yeah, but the art school scene is very trendy. And,
yeah, it is, but
it's not a real community. It's based on bullshit. No way, man.
I mean, it seems like they're having fun while I'm standing in the corner and they're all looking at me like, who's this weird, creepy old guy standing in the back looking at all of us? You know, I'm like, oh, man, yeah. I wish I was a kid, you know. Go see the Garden.
Go see the Garden. All right.
The only garden I'm interested in is one full of dandelions.
Mmm. That's good eating.
Mmm.
That is seriously good
eating. What the hell are we talking about this week?
I don't know. Anything else that we in the mailbag here?
Oh, more mail?
That's it.
That's it. All right.
Podcast at punknews.org.
You should probably.
Thank God. There's no to ask Tom which bands are hardcore or not. I was getting sort of burned out on that.
Everyone thinks you're dead because you haven't been on here for a while.
Well, I hate to break it to you, kids. I had to go somewhere for a little time and have a little time to myself. Rehab. No, just kidding. I just had some. I've been busy.
You've been being dad. It's boring.
Exactly.
All right. So before we get,
I wish I had a great story.
Yeah, but before we get into the rest of the show here, John, do you want to tell people that they can stop sending us angry letters?
Well, we only got one angry letter, and I straighten that out.
I don't know how many letters you've got. For all I know, it's been like constant deluge.
That's true. I mean, basically, when everyone sends me a rude letter, I just tell them to F off. Like that's what I learned from working in the produce market. The customer is not always right. If someone comes to you with an outrageous demand or rudeness, you can't say, oh, we appreciate your, no, you got to say, listen, you're wrong, and I'm not going to help you out. That's the key. You know, the customer is always right mentality is the wrong mentality. Anyways. Enough negativity. After a year of work, a year of delays, a year of challenges, a year of hurdles, a year of the seven stables. Or was that with Hercules, the seven stables? Or what is that? When he had to clean out all the shit out of
his labors. Sure the cool college kids are not talking about this, John.
They are talking about this, man. Cool college kids
call him Heracles, though.
That's true. Listen. We've completed the AGN tasks. Finally. The second Punk News mixtape, the Punk News Band from the PC mixtape, is now shipping. I've got them. I'm mailing them out. I'm on it. Adam White's on it. Tom's on it. But also, a lot of really cool bands are on it. I mean, we've got an exclusive Ari Up track, an exclusive Did Ignorant track, an exclusive Mr. Brew track, an exclusive Leftover Crack track, a brand new, never before heard World Inferno track. Keith Morris does the intro. We've got Circle Jerks on it. We've got posers on it. We've got B.A. Johnson in an amazing track called
Skinny Jeans. I remember Skinny Jeans.
That song is amazing. We've got Jello on it singing an old blues number. We've got The Coup. We've got the first DFL track in 19 years. We've got Wesley Willis on this. And I got to say, I'm so proud of this tape. I thought the last tape was excellent. This one I think is even better. It's more a reflection of what Adam White and myself are into. And I just think it's completely solid. The last tape, I thought every track was between a 7 out of 10 and a 10 out of 10. I think on this, no lie, every track is either a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. And there's a lot of unique, awesome stuff on this. And I'm so proud and so thrilled that we got to do this. And I really thank the people who bought them for buying them, because this would not be possible without them. But also the bands that were so generous in giving us their tracks for this tape. So buy it.
Or if you have bought it, it's shipping.
Yes.
That's the big news. Did we gloss over that?
No, I think I mentioned it.
Oh, sorry. I'm totally phased out. Yeah. So, you know, at long last, you can get the tape. And if you were waiting, you should buy one because they're fun.
They're cool.
I yell a lot.
It's sounding good. A couple of record stores bought ads in the tape. We sold ads inside the tape, not the music itself, in an insert. And so I took one to Sit and Spin Records in Philadelphia. Awesome record store in Philadelphia. Definitely the best punk record store in Philadelphia. And so I walk in and I give it to the guy and he's like thrilled. He's like, wow, this is real cool. I'm like, oh, wait, thanks. And so he's like, thanks. So I'm like, I'm looking around the shop and other people come in and people are looking around. And then he puts the tape on. And the first like 6 minutes of the tape are just me and Adam White like yelling about how we're awesome. And we have like some other people sing about how we're awesome. And so I've been told my voice is fairly unique. So there's this tape playing of me yelling how awesome I am. And I'm right there in the store. And like people in the store are like looking at me like I'm insane because they're like,
oh, fuck, that's my worst nightmare.
I'm like standing there because like the idea is like in hip hop mixtapes, like the DJs are always like, I'm the best. So that's what we're doing. But I'm not really like a world famous DJ. I'm just some dork. So I'm standing in the store and it's going, this is Johnny G. I'm the best. Nobody can mess. And I'm standing there with like a police record.
If no one has ever heard one of these tapes, I have to warn my family before we record one of them. Because I'm like, daddy's going to go in the basement and start shouting for like an hour and a half. And just don't come down here and don't worry and don't call police. And it is an exercise in excess. So, yeah, you should go check them out. All right.
It's much easier for me because I always go down the basement and shout. So the kids are just used to it. Like, oh, dad's down there yelling again.
It's Tuesday. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, listen,
it sounded real good. Like, I heard it on the system in the store. It sounded great. Buy this tape, people.
All right. So, hold on. Where can people buy the tape?
They can buy, if you just go to Punk News and Google, actually, if you just go to Google, just Google Punk News Band from the PC Mixtape. That'll take you where you need to go. If you really, really want to know, you can go to narmerbooks.storenv.com. But I would just Google Punk News Band from the PC Mixtape. That's where it'll take you there.
All right. Does someone want to play a song before we actually get into the news? Half an hour into the show.
Play a song, Adam.
All right. So, John, I'm going to take next week off.
No, because
I'm going to Arizona for, boring
work
reasons.
No, don't leave us, Adam. Don't leave us.
So anyways, whenever I got across the border, I get all anxious about it. And I'm super anxious right now because of, That cough meant like current U.S. political climate. It didn't mean like I'm up to anything, just in case the NSA is listening. So anyways, I've been thinking about the border a lot. And when you think about the border a lot and you are a Canadian punk rock person, you think about the Propagandhi song Fuck the Border a lot. So this is the Propagandhi song Fuck the Border.
Stay alive. You've got a problem with living here. What do you treats me with respect. It's a culture, consumption, that makes a life unbearable. Fuck the country, it's angry eyes, extinguished roars. Legal or illegal? What the fuck is go? Stay with it. What the fuck is go? Yeah! Fuck the border.
All right, we're back. The I want to say one of the biggest news stories in a while has landed on our doorstep in the time between we had planned to do this episode and when we started. So this is probably one of the bigger pieces of news since the Misfits reunited for Riot Fest, and it's that Jawbreaker is reuniting for Riot Fest. So here we are again. So the Riot Fest organization, they've announced the lineup for this year's event. And really the only one that anyone is talking about, despite a list of very impressive bands that are on this thing, is Jawbreaker. The band is going to headlight the headlight. That doesn't make any sense. Headline. Let's say that the band is going to headline the event's final night, which would be September 17th, I guess. This is a 3-day event, 3 days of headliners. This is going to be the bands, I guess, their big return since their breakup in 1996. Have they played no reunion shows between then and now? I don't actually know.
No, it's been 21 years since they
21
played.
Years. So they broke up in 1996 after their one and only major label release, Dear You. The band is going to get together, and they are going to perform on the big stage at Riot Fest as the headliner of the final night. The final band, this really tops off years and years, and I can say that without hyperbole because it's always been a punk news thing in the background somewhere, of reunion rumors. So for whatever reason, it may have been a bag of money, they have decided that they are finally getting back together and playing at least a show. Other acts that are playing Riot Fest, although no one's talking about any of these because Jawbreaker is such big news, includes Nine Inch Nails headlining the first day, Queens of the Stone Age headlining the second day, and then you have bands like Prophets of Rage, Pennywise, the Wu-Tang Clan, Bad Brains, X, the Lawrence Arms, the Buzzcocks, the Menzingers, the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and tons more. You can pick out all sorts of interesting bands from this list. You have Mike D from the Beastie Boys doing a DJ set. You've got, you know, a reunion show of like the late 90s, early 2000s punk band That Dog, if you ever knew who they were. You know, if you're a modern punk person, Newfound Glory is playing, Ministry is there. There's tons of bands that are playing this thing. But all anyone's ever talking about right now is Jawbreaker, and I guess understandably. But let's talk about Jawbreaker. But maybe I'm more interested in talking about the reaction to Jawbreaker, and I'm really interested in scraping the fringes of the reactions to Jawbreaker, because if I had to look at my internet right now, it is a good 90% people gushing over the fact that Jawbreaker is getting together to play a show, and then about 10% people that are being very cynical in ways that are sometimes really funny and sometimes to me very interesting because they're contrarian. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this, folks?
Well, you know,
this is the worst crowd to ask about the Jawbreaker reunion. But
well,
in any case,
you know, the funny thing is, I'm glad I found an ally in John that I'm not a big Jawbreaker fan. I mean, I don't dislike them, but I don't like them. But I gotta say, we live in this little bubble, and the excitement over Jawbreaker is equivalent in this little bubble to the excitement over the Misfits getting back together. And quite frankly, the footprint left by Jawbreaker doesn't fill up the pinky toenail of the Misfits. But like I said, we kind of live in this little bubble. You know, the couple years that I went to Riot Fest, I saw the Replacements reunion, which I think in the grand scheme of things, also much, much bigger in the big picture. And Sam Hain, which I think even at the end of the day, Sam Hain ultimately was bigger than Jawbreaker.
I mean, as far as punk news goes, Jawbreaker is really like one of those foundational org core sort of acts. I mean,
it seems
like,
to be like the Sex Pistols for people who are 34.
Exactly. Like them, like there was a while where it was like them and Kid Dynamite were really the, you know, the bands that everyone was talking about in that stripe. So, or the, I guess Lifetime as well. And it was always odd for me because like I'm that age, but at the time when Jawbreaker was a going concern, I was listening to like either California skate punk or ska. So I completely avoided them when they were an actual band. And then at the time when I started writing for Punk News, they were one of the very early lessons that I had to go learn in like 2000 where, you know, everyone else who was working for Punk News at the time was completely enamored with this band. And I'm like, oh fuck, I feel a little bit embarrassed. I don't know who these guys are at all. Right. So I had to do that weird walk of shame where you're like, oh yeah, Jawbreaker. Uh-huh. And then you run out and try to like, listen to their stuff to figure out like, holy shit, why does everyone like this band? And unfortunately with someone like Jawbreaker, who I do like, don't get me wrong, they're a band that I think like, you really did have to be on the journey with them to really fully get it, where, you know, they had a handful of full lengths that came out, and those full lengths vary sort of wildly in terms of not only just the sound, like the band's approach to songwriting, but really the audio quality on them. Like there's some of the early Jawbreaker stuff sounds like it was recorded in a tin can, and then they went all the way up to a really polished major label release, and they kind of like spanned between the two. And to really fully, I think to fully feel something like a Jawbreaker reunion in the way that I think you're intended to feel it is you had to have gone through those emotional stages at the time where, you know, you were really into, say, 24-hour Revenge Therapy, and that was really your thing. And then they signed the major label deal and you had all these trepidations, and then that record came out and it was all polished and major labely, and oh no, what's happening? And then the band breaks up and then you can't even find the major label release, and then you have to revisit it, and then you realize how much was on there that you liked, but you're still always contending with the audio quality, and like there's all these like bumps in the road, I think, of being an OG Jawbreaker fan that really give you that kind of connection with them. And then you get like a schmuck like me who wasn't listening to them at the time. And I'm just like going back and listening to all of these records in succession after the fact. And I have then my dumb opinion where I can go cherry pick things where I'm like, oh, I like this. And I like this. And I like this less. And I don't really like this at all. But you know, I don't get it in the same way that I think someone was there got it. And however that for whatever this band did to connect with people at the time, those people connected with it. So yeah. So for some people, like, this is totally their Misfits. But I think that it's a super hard band to try to, I don't know, to try to sell someone who wasn't there for that band at that time to be on. Like I couldn't go and just like pick some random guy that's been disengaged from punk rock for 20 years and be like, look, you got to clue into this Jawbreaker thing. Because I think it'd be really hard to do that, because I think if you weren't there, it's not going to resonate in the same way. Not to say that like things don't hold up, but I just don't think it would have that same effect, because there are so many bands these days that, you know, basically ape their sound. There was a really funny tweet from like Brendan Kelly of the Lawrence Arms earlier. I think I might be misquoting it, where he was saying like, you know, I can't wait to play Riot Fest so I can watch Beach Slang, watch Jawbreaker. And it's like, yeah, Beach Slang still totally sounds like Jawbreaker a lot of the time. So I get that.
That sounds like a horrible insult.
I hope I didn't misquote him and then just like make him insult.
No, it sounds like a horrible insult to Jawbreaker, I mean. But hey, whatever.
So, okay. I mean, John, you weigh in on this. I'm sure you have something super.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Adam. Whenever I read this lineup, I just get so sleepy. I'm sorry.
But Adam, don't you think, going back to my previous thought, don't you think that though, as much as there's a lot of excitement about it in our little bubble, Jawbreaker was a band that had a relatively small impact, had a huge impact on a small amount of people. You know what I mean? They just weren't, yeah. You know, they don't stack up against a band like the Misfits or the Replacements or something.
I'm surprised at the billing that they're getting. Like, I don't like, Jawbreaker's,
I am too. They seem like
Jawbreaker's huge in the punk news world, but I mean, outside of the punk news world, like or that general audience, I mean, I don't think they're like, I like Queens of the Stone Age, as bland and as boring as they are way bigger than Jawbreaker, I think, but maybe I'm wrong.
But even them, are they an arena band?
Yeah, Queens of the Stone Age?
Is Queens of the Stone Age an arena band?
I can see Queens of the Stone Age.
Nine Inch Nails is definitely an arena band.
Queens of the Stone Age is the new Pearl Jam. And by that, I mean bland, huge rock band.
That's another horrible insult.
I know, it's meant to be.
I like certain things from Queens of the Stone Age. And Queens of the Stone Age had your buddy Nick Oliveri in there.
Their first couple albums were actually pretty good.
People are saying Nick Oliveri is like John's best friend for some reason. Nick Oliveri is not John's best friend. John likes a lot of the bands that Nick Oliveri is in, and John thinks Nick Oliveri is an interesting person. But I'm not like Nick Oliveri's like best homie. We're not like going out for burgers together or something.
If Nick Oliveri is boarded up in his house and he's got 50 SWAT patrollers around him and they're all pointing their guns at him and he can only make one call, does that call go to John Gentile?
Definitely not.
All right. Hold right now. I got to go get a charger. I have 3% battery. Hold on.
Oh, typical Adam, huh, John? Unprepared.
I hear you, man. Listen, Tom. This is one really boring lineup, isn't it, Tom? I mean,
I got to tell you, you know, it's like, man, I used to go to the Warped Tour. I started going like first year, 95, I think it was, or whatever. And every year, like, it got a little less in my wheelhouse. And I definitely feel that happening.
But these are like almost all old bands.
But I think what's going on is they're trying to appeal to a wider audience. And the fact of the matter is, you know what my crowd is, dude? My crowd is the punk rock bowling crowd. All old man punk rock bands. That's what I want.
But punk rock bowling has.
I don't
want
to branch out, dude. I don't want to see MIA. I have no desire. If she played in my backyard, I'd draw my blinds.
Wow.
I mean, it's just not for me, Tom, you know.
Did you just make up that diss? Did you make that up? That diss.
Absolutely.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
You can use it as long as you credit me.
Punk rock bowling has some cool young bands, though, man.
I'm back.
But, you know, I mean, ultimately, I'd rather listen to Coxbar than, you know,
I'll tell you,
Hotelier or whatever the hell that is.
Are you guys recording actual show or should I cut this out?
That's up to Greg. I don't know.
No, we talked shit about you while you were gone, so they should definitely leave.
I'll tell you what surprises me about this, or not surprised, is I'm surprised at how low billing Buzzcocks are getting. Like, Buzzcocks are, like, under Fiddler.
I know, and Bad Brains.
Well, I'm about to get to that. But Buzzcocks, like, man, Buzzcocks should be way, way higher. Also, I'm very surprised at how small Gwar is. But, however, maybe it's kind of deserved. Gwar, after the pet. Tom, I think you can sympathize with me on this, is Gwar used to be the band, but they are having trouble recovering from the passing of Dave Brocky.
Gwar, the thing with Gwar and Riot Fest, Gwar plays every year. Most of the other bands are on kind of like a 2-year rotation, but Gwar plays every year. But the thing that really stands out to me, honestly, about this year's lineup is there's a few staple bands that have been there every year, every other year, but there's no Descendants this year. There's no Effects this year. There's no Bad Religion this year. Those bands have been kind of they've kind of built this thing around those bands. But that being said, Descendants are actually touring again, so maybe they're not going to the huge draw like they once were.
We are. I think that, honestly, they're going to make a shit ton of money this year because of this lineup. Because if you look at it,
not people my age.
Sure, but everything that you just said, you know, everyone that was going to potentially go there for the Descendants or for NOFX or for any of those kinds of bands, most of those people are going to show up for Jawbreaker regardless of what else is on that lineup.
So listen, you drop,
I don't know, X zeros of dollars, Jawbreaker reunites to play the last day of your festival. And then what do you do for the other nights? You go off the punk reservation a little bit. You book Nine Inch Nails and Queens of the Stone Age. You bring in all these alt rock people. And then you're making a ton of money.
True.
Because all the punk guys that would have been there otherwise, they're showing up for Jawbreaker now, right? And now you get all these alt rock people.
I disagree, Adam, because I would show up for those other bands, but I wouldn't, you know, Jawbreaker's not on my radar at all.
No, but I agree,
there's people right now who are just creaming their jeans about this, but to me, I couldn't be more indifferent.
But then you, as the old man, right?
I'm a grumpy old bastard.
Sure,
but
you totally go see like X and GBH and Buzzcocks and
GBH. There was two bucket list bands on there for me, bands that I have never seen that I would like to see, and they were GBH and Bad Brains. Those are the only two bands on there that Turn My Crank that I hadn't seen. You know, I'd love to see Buzzcocks, X, all the old punk rock bands, but I've seen some of them multiple times over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting lineup from that standpoint, but I mean, it's weird because no one is talking about the lineup at all. And I mean, hey, Ministry, Dinosaur Jr., like, there's interesting bands that are on this thing.
It's like Lollapalooza.
Yeah, but holy fuck, everyone's just talking about Jawbreaker. And so anyway, so it's been universal adornment from, like, my internet, except for, like, a few little fringe people. And, like, there's been a few bands that I've seen that have gone and posted something. And these are just like, you know, punk bands from here and there that have just, you know, had sort of the balls to step up and just be like, fuck that. And it was like, wow, that is not what I expected anyone to voice in this, like, sea of positivity. And, you know, I appreciate seeing the contrarian bits show up there. Like, who?
Because real punks are going to see a $6 BYOB show in a shed that same night. They're not going to be at the Jawbreaker show.
Are people mad because Jawbreaker's paying a big fest, or are people mad because Jawbreaker's reuniting for a whole bunch of money, or are people mad because Jawbreaker's boring?
So, I mean, here, actually, it's a different for the, so the one.
Yeah, lots of backhanded compliments.
The one that I saw that really stuck out to me is, I don't mean to drag them into this if they don't want to be in this, but I'm gonna because they tweeted it publicly. There's a cool band from Vancouver called Needles Pins, or like Needles and then like /Pins. I don't know how the fuck you pronounce that, like Needles and Pins, I guess.
Like Cloak Dagger.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, so Needles and Pins are cool. Anyways, though, they went and they posted something today where they said, the ostensible time machine that is displaced millennial nostalgia has done it again. Fuck a Jawbreaker reunion, right? And I'm like, all right, that, you know what? That is an interesting view on this where, you know, where it's not just like, oh man, I wish I could have seen Jawbreaker. Oh my God, now I have a chance. I'm going to go see it. Because then, actually, so there's another band that chimed in here who plays in that same Vancouver scene named Tough Age. And Tough Age responds and they say, see them how they were meant to be seen, old and playing on a big festival stage in broad daylight. Right? And it's just like...
in a field with 50,000 people.
And, you know, and there's a couple former former punk news people that... I won't mention because they didn't agree to be on this show necessarily, that had voiced something like that too. We're like, oh man, now you can see Jawbreaker standing on the other end of a field with 30,000 people in front of you. So But
here's your choice. Yeah. You can see them like that, or you can never see them. You know, I saw the Replacements play in a field. It was dark with 50,000 people. And it was cool because that's it. They're never going to tour again. They're not going to do clubs, you know. That's your choice. Go see it or don't.
Like, that's the thing. I wonder, is it a mistake to try to like say like, oh, well, what you're seeing isn't genuine in those cases? Because, I mean, it's not, but it's seeing something, right? Like, it's not the spectacle that you would have gotten back in the day, but it's still a spectacle, right?
I mean, they were on a major label. It doesn't seem that they were entirely opposed to making money at any point.
I just want to know, why didn't I go see Misfits, Morrissey, Leftover Crack, and Ween? Why? Why didn't I go? Why? Instead, I got to go see Jawbreaker.
So
never know, John. Maybe live, it's all the difference.
It's always interesting to see what we make of this kind of reunion stuff, because it's really easy to get up or down on it, depending if it's a band that you like. So, you know, the Misfits get back together and that's a huge deal for us. And, you know, Jawbreaker gets back together. And for most of the punk news universe, it's a huge deal. Not so much for us three, but you know, it's, you could make the same counter arguments to either of them. It really just depends if you like the band. I feel like you could make the same, like, yeah, you know, why are you going to see the Misfits when they're old and fat and on a stage of 50,000 people? Like, you know, touche, right? You can make the exact same argument.
I don't buy that argument at all. I'm very much a pragmatist, and I believe that, listen, seeing Flag is better than not seeing Flag at all. Actually, way better, because Flag was awesome. I never bought in that bands should never reunite. My stance has always been that the point, bands never write music not to play music. So if you get a chance to hear one of the main guys play it, or most of the main guys play it, no one can play it like them. And so it's always worthwhile to go see it if you're into it. So I'm always pro reunion. I was never against reunions at all. I think they're always cool. You know, even if they're for the money. You know, I mean, like bands never play for money? Most bands play for money. Crass played for money. You know, so
but with that in mind, are you willing to admit that Jawbreaker getting back together is cool for people on that level, despite your distaste?
Oh yeah, if I was a Jawbreaker fan, I'd be over the moon. Because no one would ever see this happening, you know? I guess people are a little bummed out that the reasons Jawbreaker always gave for reuniting is we don't think it's the Fugazi argument. We don't think it's right. We're not at the right spot by now. Oh, you want to give us $1 million? Let's do it, you know? So it makes you question whether or not Jawbreaker is as sacred as the band claimed they were for the past 20 years. Does that give it a slight tinge of, I guess, annoyance? Perhaps. But you know, everything in life, nothing in life is an absolute. Everything is a scale. And if I was a Jawbreaker fan, the chance to see Jawbreaker would way outweigh the other worry, if you will. Like when I saw Steve Ignorant, when I saw Steve Ignorant of Crass. No, it's not really Crass, but it's Steve Ignorant of Crass doing Crass tunes, and it was awesome. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with you in that, you know, if you can go, you know, see a person perform live, you know, regardless if it's their prime or whatever, you know, you should go see it. Like that person that's playing isn't dead, right? Like there's a real kind of like human aspect where they're out there making music, you know, regardless of where it fits and what, you know, in the musical history or whatever. So yeah, I would agree with you there, but. I mean, when I look at this personally, you know, as a retrospective inductee into Jawbreaker 20 years ago, I appreciated their stuff. I looked at this and I went, oh, huh. Wow. Who's left? I guess like Operation Ivy, like that was my reaction.
Operation Ivy, Fugazi, and the Smiths and Dead Kennedys. That's it.
Right. Like there are not many. And, you know, if you ask me. You know,
Pistols, man. It's been 20 years. Time to do it again.
Do you think Pistols have done it though, right? Like
twice. I know, but they did it 20th. They did it 20th.
I've seen Sex Pistols 97. Twice, they did. I think. Was it twice?
I never did see them.
Do you think they tried to reunite the Beastie Boys, but couldn't? So that's why they got Mike D doing a DJ set.
How are they going to reunite the Beastie Boys?
Well, I mean, do you think they would have Ad Rock? I mean, Run DMC reunited, even though Jam Master Jay was dead. Do you think Riot Fest and the Beastie Boys, and maybe they did say, Beastie Boys, will Ad Rock and Mike, will you guys do a Beastie Boys set with so-and-so as a guest star, be Beastie Boys with? And I don't know if that's true, but if they said no, I have even more respect for the Beastie Boys than I already have, because they said, listen, it's not the Beastie Boys without Adam Young, so we're not going to do it. And I have such respect for them.
I mean, in my opinion, they will never do that. But
I was like, do you think they did?
The guys from Prophets of Rage could fill in.
But I'm saying, do you think they did? And so this Mike D DJ set is sort of a compromise. Like, or do you think they caught a Mike D?
Perhaps. I mean, like, I think no one ever said that. Like that you know, the other guys had to like hang it up completely. But I'm sure they would never play under that name.
No, but I'm saying, do you think Riot Fest said to Ad Rock and Mike D, "Will you be the Beastie Boys again?"
I am willing to bet that that kind of thing had happened. I mean, not to cast any dispersions on the character of Riot Fest, but there's definitely some amount of money going around when booking these things if they're getting the fucking Misfits to reunite and they're doing a Jawbreaker reunion, right? They're swinging for the fences with the kind of things they're trying to bring in here. So just in the spirit of swinging for the fences, I wouldn't doubt it, but Beasties would never do that. Tom, your Prophets of Rage thing made me sad inside. Oh, I would be so deflated.
I can't even remember who the singers are. Is it? I can't remember who the
guy is. It's Chuck D, Public Enemy, dude.
Chuck D, yeah. He could die.
I have no problem with Chuck D, but subbing anyone in would just make me sad. So, no. All right, so let's get off this because we've been talking about it for a while.
The other thing is with Riot Fest, I want to say in defense of these guys, because I think they're good dudes. I think the Riot Fest guys are good dudes. They're about my age. They love the music, man. I mean, they ultimately are good dudes. But the thing is, you're sort of at the mercy of bands' touring cycles. So a lot of the bands that appeal to the old man punk like myself are not on the road this year. So I think that's a lot of the reason why it's, you know, you only can get what the people are active at the moment.
So that said, Tom, do you want to pop in and play a song here to usher us away from this mammoth of a story?
Man, I hadn't given it much thought, but yeah, let's do. Okay, so last year there was a band from Grand Rapids that was making pretty decent waves, signed to Red Scare. They were called the Lippies. They put out their debut album and they broke up like a month or two later in great small punk fashion. And a couple of the guys from the band have formed a new band that's much, much more aggressive than the Lippies were, and not so much like gender politics and just kind of a straight up raging, maybe like off with a female fronted off is what we're going to call them. And they're called the Bloody Lips, and they just put out their debut album earlier this year. It's called B-Side Noise, and I'm going to play I think it's the last song from the album. It's called Abandon Me.
That was the Bloody Lips with Abandon Me, and we're back. A couple more stories. Some stories for the old bastards among us, I guess. So the first.
Thank God.
Tom, we stack this deck for you when you show up. No one's talking about. I was going to mention some young bands, and I'm like, I don't even know.
I am happy, though, that there's a few things that actually are in my wheelhouse. I swear, usually when I'm on, it's like, oh, the new Newfound Glory video is pretty great.
You see, but
Tom, we have never said the new Newfound Glory.
No, we didn't say it was great.
But I feel like that band is probably.
I remember having to watch one time or one of those bands like that. I mean, maybe not
Newfound Glory. This is how out of touch we are, is that I'm pretty sure that band is pushing 20 years. So,
oh yeah, they are. I think they're touring right now.
So I don't even know what like young people are actually listening to that's trendy at this point. I can't even make a joke about it.
Lil Yachty, he's huge.
21 Pilots.
I guess, is that a thing?
My daughter's constantly listening to 21 Pilots.
Lil Uzi Vert.
You're just making things up.
No, I'm all not. Right. That's a real guy.
So we are excited to finally premiere on Punk News a song from the upcoming Cox Sparrow record. The new song is called Contender. The track is going to be on the upcoming Idol, which is titled Forever, and it's due out on April 21st, which is a couple days from right now, on the Pirates Press label and Chase the Ace Records. You can find like links to all the pre-orders and everything like that on Punk News right now. So there's a quote from the band about the song and everything here, so I'm just going to read this to you. It says, "We all know a person that has something about them, the potential to make it, or at least have a good crack at doing so. Unfortunately, many of those people ruin it by treating people like shit. It's when their confidence turns into arrogance. There's no need for it. We've no time for people like that. Treat people the way you expect to be treated yourself." And that's what they say about the song Contender, which you can actually go listen to on Punk News right now. There's also a handful of tour dates that we posted from them on the release date of the show. They're going to be playing a show in Berkeley, California. And then they'll be in and about in the on the West Coast, playing a couple shows before Punk Rock Bowling, and then back to the UK for a bunch of stuff in the fall. There's sure there'll be dates in between those because there's a huge gap. But anyways, new Cox Sparrow song, Thomas.
Okay, I'm working on reviewing the album. This is the most pleasant surprise I've had all year. I never anticipated another Cox Sparrow album, and the album is really good. The song is actually not one of my favorites from the album. I mean, it's fine, but I'm super excited about this album. These guys are old. They're celebrating their 45th anniversary this year, and quite frankly, they kick more ass than most bands like a third of their age. Shame on you, young punks, with your lameness.
Their picture that we have going with the story is amazing to me, because a lot of the times you like one of these like, you know, veteran punk bands, they'll still take like a pretty rock and roll picture. You know, they'll put on some sunglasses, muss up their hair or something like that, and they try to do like a little bit like, oh look, I'm still out there, I'm doing like a Keith Richards thing. These guys fucking look like my grandfathers and uncles. It's amazing.
Well, listen, dude, they're having their 45th anniversary. I believe that they're pensioners. I mean, that is my guess, because a couple of years ago, they started playing a shitload more shows in the U.S. It used to be a very, very rare to get a Cox Bar, you know, like they'd come every couple of years and it would be a big event. And they're playing a ton of U.S. shows. I suspect they're retired from their, you know, being mailmen or whatever.
I didn't mean that as an insult at all. Like,
I got to tell you, yeah. The energy that, have you seen them, John?
I have. I was in the Punk Rock Bowling last year. And
aren't they the most energetic bunch of old geezers you've ever seen in your life?
They are among the most energetic old geezers I've seen in my life, yes.
So you're not a fan, you're not a Cox Bar fan.
No, I like Cox Bar. I enjoy Cox Bar a good deal. I'm not a Cox Bar maniac. The problem I have with Scott, and I say the problem is I've got Shock Troops. I like Shock Troops. It's a great record. I like that Cox Bar actually
35-year-old record.
I like that Cox Bar predates punk by like three or four years. They formed in 1973.
72.
And they had a relationship with the Small Faces, which I think is pretty cool. The thing with Cox Bar that I guess troubles me or I find interesting in punk rock, at least in American punk rock, the theme is I think for myself. I hate everyone. I depend on myself. If I want to do something, I'll do it. I have freedom. With Cox Bar, we see the exact opposite message. We see me and the boys are going to make it through together. You know, we all work together. I can depend on my friends. My friends are like me and we all support each other.
But that's always all skinhead music is like
and,
that, dude.
And that's why I think it's kind of dumb.
Oh, no. I
like Cox Bar, though.
British.
I think Cox
Bar. It's very British.
I was surprised at Punk Rock Bowling last year that Cox Bar headlined over Flag. I thought that really did surprise me. I like Cox Bar, and they are very good live, and I would definitely go see them. I'm not anti-Cox Bar. I just have a slight problem with the mentality. I think it urges conformity.
I don't know, man.
I think they're a good band. Yeah, they're just not my favorite.
I think you're overanalyzing it. But anyway, I'm excited for this record. It was a nice surprise. You know, they're very productive. This is their sixth full length in their 45 years.
Yeah, and their first in 10 years.
Yeah, and they've been on a 10-year schedule, basically. You know, it's kind of a cool story. As far as I understand it, they were kind of grew up together. They were all friends. They played in this band. They had a little bit of success in the early 80s with the Shock Groups album. And then they did Run Riot 84. And they broke up not long after. And then they sort of started running into each other later. They'd never left the old neighborhood or something and started picking up again. And there's been basically one lineup change in 45 years, or one significant lineup change in 45 years. I mean, it's a cool story.
That lineup change was like in the 90s, right? So we're still.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, like who's the young guitar player of the Rolling Stones? He's been there for like freaking 30 years.
Ronnie Wood is the new guitar player. Yeah. He's 60.
And these guys, I was thinking, these guys kind of are the Rolling Stones of punk rock.
They
are.
I mean,
just, you know, they just.
Well,
if the Clash were the Beatles and they kind of fizzled out, you know, Cox Bar just keeps on chugging.
Well, look at this. Cox Bar is only 10 years younger than the Rolling Stones. And you know how old the Rolling Stones are, you know.
John, let me. Here's the thing with Cox Bar. Cox Bar are. They are the age of my parents.
I'm saying I think they're cool.
But I'm saying they're the age of my parents, and I'm in my.
You think they still kick ass? These guys still kind of look like they kick ass. I mean, I don't mean
they do. They look like they could. They might have brass knuckles and things in their guitar cases. I saw them twice. I saw them at Riot Fest, and I saw them at a club. And I got to say, the club show, Stiff Little Fingers opened, and it was probably top 10 all time for me. It was so good. Stiff Little Fingers are so good too.
Only one way to find out. We need to rumble with Cox Bar to see if they still.
Well, I'll tell you what, the three of us aren't going to do it. There's five of them, and four of the five of them are big. Oh, one of them's kind of skinny.
I'm not going to fight. We'll get Ricky to piss him off inadvertently. And
we'll let Adam take the little guy, and the rest of us will square off with those big, like, soccer hooligans.
I don't want to fight Cox Bar. Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, I'll fight Jawbreaker every day. I'm going to fight Cox Bar.
Yeah, they seem kind of. Yeah, exactly. I'm not fighting anybody who has a favorite soccer team.
Honestly, my opinion of Cox Bar just went up 10% just because Adam makes a salient point. Like, yeah, sure, anybody will fight Jawbreaker. You don't want to fight Cox Bar.
It's like, so you don't like Cox Bar, huh?
All right. Well, keeping with this age bracket, Iggy Pop. Is now streaming a new single. It is called Asshole Blues. It's an acoustic lo-fi ditty that is part of the Jacuzzi Boys new Flexi series, which I have no idea what that means.
I will tell you. Jacuzzi Boys.
John, what does that mean?
I guess I wasn't very clear what that description was.
Nope.
This Jacuzzi Boys is a garage rock band. They've put out some stuff on Burger Records, also Goner Records. They're very much kind of like that hip garage rock scene. Iggy Pop is a big fan of that kind of music, somewhat surprisingly, if you ask me. So Jacuzzi Boys put out Flexis because they're cheap to put out, even though this Flexi isn't particularly cheap. And so they asked Iggy Pop, can we put out one of your songs? So Iggy Pop said, sure, here's an acoustic number I did called Asshole Blues. So the Jacuzzi Boys are putting out an Iggy Pop single on their label.
All right. That makes sense.
And are you eating again?
Adam? I am. I'm eating right now.
Dude, I think honestly.
Like, got a bucket. You got like a bucket of fried chicken, don't you?
I have a bucket of popcorn that my wife snuck me this and didn't make any noise and was like, here you go. Eat this while you're on your podcast, you asshole. And I'm like, ah, I've just been sitting here looking at it.
I'm gonna speak frankly. First of all, it's hard to do convincing blues after 1960, whatever. Like, there's a lot of guys that do blues now, and you're like, this is stupid. I know you're not Howlin' Wolf. I know you're not some guy that sold his soul to the devil like Robert Johnson and has hellhounds on your trail. I know you drive a Volvo. You know, like, if you drive a Volvo, I don't think you can be a blues guy. You know what I mean? So it's very hard to do blues convincingly in the current era. Also, I'll just be frank. It's very hard to do blues convincingly if you're a white guy. So many white guys just try to do blues and just sound like white guys doing blues. You know what I mean? Iggy Pop. Man. Must be because he's Iggy.
You know, I think it helps to have slept in the gutter, you know?
I don't know what it's about. I mean, Iggy really is just a dynamo. This sounds cool. This track sounds like a blues track, and I thought it was cool. Cool.
I mean, he's definitely pulling off the spirit of, you know, this having been recorded in a shotgun shack somewhere. Like, it,
yeah, it's definitely got the Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson kind of a thing going on.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it works there. I mean, like Iggy Pop has got enough, like, you know, gravity in his voice that he can go, you know, do a simple blues song. And you've heard, you know, 12 Bar Blues a million times, but you're listening to this and it's not so much about like that he's doing anything interesting musically. It's just that like it's Iggy and his voice and the character that's in there singing it. So it's fun in that respect. You know, I don't know if you should go make a record or anything, but you know, it's a cool little single.
Nah, a record would be too much, but a single I think is perfect. Yeah,
I don't think you want 45 minutes of this, but
yeah. I think a single of this cool. is perfect. I think, I mean, I wish it was an actual 7-inch, not a flexi, because I kind of hate flexis, but this is cool.
I haven't heard a blues song that was that straight up in its content since another Rolling Stone song.
What song?
Cocksucker Blues.
That's not even not a blues song. Or maybe it is. It is.
But I know, the content of it was so straightforward. I mean, there was literally, like, the name of the song was, you know, what the song was about.
And like, that's it, you do know? You know the Rolling Stones song, Cocksucker Blues?
I don't know if I do.
So the Rolling Stones had a very oppressive contract with Decca Records. And they had one single they had to deliver with them before they could go and start their own label, Rolling Stone Records. Rolling Stones were one of the first bands to start their own label and put stuff out on their own label. So they turned in a track called
Copying Who? Who were they copying with that, John?
I guess it was Apple Records out first.
Yeah, they were copying the Beatles, absolutely.
Stones beat them. Anyways.
No, they didn't. Yeah, but that's
right. Stones are way better than the Beatles. So anyway, they recorded this track called Cocksucker Blues, which I think was never officially released. Because in 1968 or 1967, no labels releasing it.
It wasn't going to get near.
Yeah, a song called Cocksucker Blues. So listen, in
bet you those 7-inch records are worth big money, though.
I don't think there are any official 7-inches of Cocksucker Blues.
No? Did they never press that? It's not that hard to find. I mean, if you go poking around the
internet. Bootleg-wise, it's super easy to find. But I'm pretty sure there's never, ever been an official release of Cocksucker Blues. I do have Cocksucker Blues on a German record that appears to be official. But it might not be official. Anyways, let's I was going to play an Iggy Pop track, but we're going to be celebrating Iggy Pop all day on Friday. So in the name of history, let's just do the Rolling Stones doing Cocksucker Blues.
Well, I'm alone, some schoolboy, and I just came into town. Yeah, I'm a lonesome schoolboy, and I just came into town. Well, I heard so much about London, I decided to check it out. And I wait in Leicester Square with the palm of the look in my eye. Yeah, I'm leaning on Nelson's column, but all I do is talk to the line. Cocks up, we're gonna get my ass fucked. I may have no money, but I know where to put it every time. Well, I asked a young policeman if it only locked me up for the night. Well, I had pigs in the farmyard. Some of them, they're all right. Well, he fucked me with his truncheon, and his helmet was way too tight. Up. Where can I get my asper? Well, I ain't got no money, but I know where to put it every time.
right, that was the Rolling Stones.
Wow, that was fast and loose, man. We really rolled with the changes there.
Mm, that's what we do.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's funny. I always use a joke about how every time I'm on, we always have like some Wang related story. And today we haven't had any Wang related stories. We've used the word cock in one concept or in one way or another, like 50 times. So,
well, I mean, we're trying to
enjoy the podcast, kids.
We're just trying to make you
keep
happy.
It real.
So.
Thank you.
All right. So that is it. If anyone wants to write us an email, it is podcast@punknews.org. We will see you guys in 7 days. Any parting thoughts or anything, or are we out?
It was good to be back, guys.
All right.
I enjoyed it very much. We'll see you later.
We're out. Be good.